I'm Matt Katz, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. The coronavirus continues to spread across the country, but that doesn't seem to be holding back Major League Baseball from pushing towards their mutated 2020 season. Now down to 60 games from the normal 162, with all sorts of new rules and conditions. But not everyone is ready to play ball.
We're trying to bring baseball back during a pandemic that's killed 130,000 people. We're way worse off as a country than where we were in March when we shut this thing down. And like, look at where other developed countries are in their response to this. We haven't done any of the things that other countries have done to bring sports back. Sports are like the reward of a functional society. And we're just like trying to just bring it back, even though we've taken none of the steps to flatten the curve.
That's Sean Doolittle, pitcher for the World Series champs, the Washington Nationals. He's not the only one who's skeptical about playing this season. So far, 9 players have opted out altogether, including Dodgers superstar pitcher David Price. Some teams have delayed training due to a lack of testing. And unfortunately, 31 players and 7 staff members have tested positive for the virus. All of those factors just might put a hiccup in the season's start. Here with us is Jane McManus, the director of the Maris Center for Sports Communication and sports columnist for the New York Daily News. Jane, good to have you back.
Oh, thanks for having me, Matt. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. So tell me what this modified season is supposed to look like.
I think ideally, when it was first envisioned, it was going to be something that could be fairly well contained. A lot of testing would be involved. Major League Baseball even contracted with a lab in Utah to do all of the testing. And the idea was tested every 2 days, 24 hours turnaround. And I think what's happening is that the ideal of a brief season that says sports is back has actually run into the reality of, you know, what Sean Doolittle said, which is a society that isn't functioning very well. They're having difficulty just getting these tests to the lab to be tested, and the turnaround is taking 7 days. And I think if you look around at the larger culture at large, you have states where it's very difficult for people to get testing. So there's this contrast between baseball players getting tested every 2 days and these long lines of cars at these drive-up testing stations in places like Texas and Florida, where it's very difficult to get the testing. And it's just kind of, instead of showing the way that the United States can come back from something difficult like the coronavirus, it's actually showing quite the opposite.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be doing opening day July 23rd and 24th, and that's just around the corner. What are some of the other weird new rules that the MLB is imposing for this 60-game season?
Well, there's the universal designated hitter, which is, just was jarring for some people to to take. But yeah, that's one of the rules that there's going to be. I think just the whole idea of the structure of the season, you have certain players who've come out and said that they're not sure, what it'll mean to necessarily make the playoffs or to win a World Series this year, and that's going to be a lot different just because baseball is a sport that really is about, it's a marathon, right? You have 162 games. It's about going from city to city to city to city to play, 3-game stands, whatever. And now it's going to look very, very different. And so I think it's just kind of, how does this season even fit into the record book necessarily, where baseball is so used to having everything be regular and all of these stats and everything, and it's just going to look very different.
Right, and I understand they also want a player on second base to begin the extra innings. And then the rule that really caught my eye was no spitting. Is that real? Are they going to enforce that? I mean, what happens if you spit? Is there any...
Well, a penalty? I don't know. You have to take a lap?
Yeah.
I think that this is all very much, I think you're just supposed to not spit. Maybe not throw the Gatorade either when you get angry.
Right.
But I think there are a lot of these things that are going to have to be instituted for baseball, just like they're going to have to be instituted in Little League, and they're going to have to be instituted across the country. And the idea, I think, is partially that you want to set some sort of example of how everybody else will be able to play baseball if they want to play baseball, right? And because we as a culture are going to have to do a lot of social distancing if we want to come back. And the idea of maybe when you're going over lineups, when you're sitting in a dugout, maybe not sitting quite so close, physical contact, that kind of thing. I mean, within the world of baseball, yes, you're going to have testing, which obviously there are lots of debates about whether or not that's happening in a functional enough way to be able to get the sport back. But at the same time, I think there is this idea that, you know, that it, they're trying to set the tone, right, for sports to be able to come back. And how does one do that in a responsible way?
For the guys who are opting out of playing this season, what are they saying? What are their reasons?
Well, a lot of them are talking about, you know, either they have small kids, some of them have kids with pre-existing conditions, some of them have family members, some of them are personally have, you know, this is the other thing is that I think there's this assumption culturally that a lot of players are going to be just fine if they get it, they're young, they're healthy. But, you know, there are a lot of players, not just in baseball, but across professional sports that do have underlying conditions that they've been able to manage and play with really successfully. Like, you know, sickle cell trait in the NFL, I know a couple of players have that. There's asthma. There are a couple of players who've been able to play with that. And the idea then that they're going to be just fine, well, they know the picture of their health. They may not talk about it publicly. It may not be part of their public profile or on their baseball card, but they know what it is. And they have to make those decisions kind of with that in mind. And it's not a no-brainer for everyone. And I think there are a couple of players, you know, that we've heard who actually gave this some thought and have kind of are wrestling with it in real time. Like they're willing to give it a shot. They're willing to see if baseball can get the testing process right. But if they can't, I think you might see more and more players feel like it's not a safe enough environment for them to return to because they're not in a bubble. When they're home, they can go home and hang out with their kids and hang out with their grandparents and hang out with their wives. And that is the kind of thing where there is not zero risk. And so there's not zero risk to their families. And, you know, the idea is they are actually going to be going from stadium to stadium. So traveling on buses to get to games, traveling on airplanes to get to stadiums, all of this is going to be happening. So the same issues that you would have traveling for your summer vacation and deciding whether or not to take a plane, they're going to be taking, you know, they're going to be taking these decisions and these risks to play a season. And so it's not foolproof. And I think more and more players are going to start really having to, when the rubber meets the road here, decide whether or not they're going to stay in.
What about stadium staff and the less visible people in the baseball infrastructure? Have they been speaking up about whether they want to stay home or get back to work? Because they're, you know, equally at risk, right?
They would be equally at risk. And this is part of the, you know, I haven't necessarily seen any reporting specifically on that, but it's certainly a consideration. And, you know, you think about essential workers, for example, and how many of them have become ill and how many people who work in close quarters in meatpacking plants, for example, or in warehouses have become ill. And it's not something, I think the medical concerns are different. If some, a lot of these people who have these jobs are seasonal employees, so the healthcare that they might have access to could be very different. And I think those are, you know, those, you know, just like in our regular economy, those are kind of the unheard voices, but often the people who bear the brunt of the risk.
Sure. And they won't get paid, I imagine. Many of these people, if the things get worse and the season ends up being canceled, their livelihoods are at risk, I imagine, right?
That's right. And some teams, you know, part of the reason that some of the teams applied for the PPP program federally was to be able to protect the wages of those employees who work in stadiums. Some teams have opted to continue paying people and some have not. You know, it's one of those situations where it's very tricky. How are you treating the employees who have been there every single year and do the kind of unheralded jobs, which would be very risky? I mean, you talk about, you know, cleaning a locker room. Are they going to have the same sort of testing available to them, for example?
On the other side of the spectrum for the owners, can we put a dollar value roughly on how much a season, if it is canceled, if it ends up being canceled, how much that would cost ownership and baseball in general?
So baseball stands to lose money anyway, just based on the shortness of the season and also based on the fact that about 40% of baseball's revenue is via gate, which means that, you know, fans coming in through the gate to sit in the seats. And that's obviously money that's not going to be there this season. So they're already looking at a loss. A lot of teams also have stake or own outright the broadcast, local broadcast networks that show every single game. And, you know, most towns have these. You'll know it because they're always playing baseball games all year long and a lot of replays of games as well. That's another area of, you know, kind of financial where they could take a hit financially.
And I've been talking hypothetically about a canceled season. I mean, is that a possibility at this point, considering the difficulty in starting this thing up?
I think it is definitely a possibility. And I'll say that because out of all of the professional sports league, there's the least amount of trust between the baseball players and the baseball owners. And I think that you saw that in how difficult it was for them to come to some sort of financial agreement, you know, where they get 37% of their pay for playing 37% of the season. And just even coming to that kind of an arrangement was really challenging. So I think that the idea that the plans to keep players safe, if they're not trusting the owners to be able to do that, I do think you're going to see more and more players wonder if it's worth it.
If they only play 60 of 162 games, are the statistics, the lifeblood of baseball, are they legitimate? And would the ultimate World Series winners be seen in baseball history as legitimate champions?
You know, I have to think that they really wouldn't. You know, there are a number of, you know, people have kind of like done different dissections of why that's the case. For example, looking at teams who've had hot streaks late in the season and ended up, you know, making it to the playoffs and winning the World Series. So if you'd ended the season at 60 games, there are a lot of World Series winners who would not have ended up being competitive at that point. And so it's this idea of streaks and getting hot and, you know, pitchers getting, you know, better as the season goes along and kind of creating the space for that to happen.
Right.
And that's just not something that would happen this year. So I think, you know, also when you're looking at stuff like the DH and when you're looking at some of those rules changes, you know, it's going to be so different. It's really, it would be apples to oranges when it comes to the record book. And, you know, it might be something, you know, like an interesting kind of, hey, did you remember when, or did you know, one of
right.
those
yeah,
kind of
sure.
crazy facts, right, that they pull out. But I don't see how you could actually compare it. It's such an unusual environment. The best players, a lot of them, like David Price, you know, isn't playing. So how are you going to be, you know, the competition in the field isn't going to be the same for the hitters, you know? So it's going to look so different, I think. Rosters are different, you know. I just don't see how you really compare the two.
Okay, Jane, my last question is a personal one. Do my Mets have a better or worse chance of winning the World Series in a shortened season?
I mean,
can you give me any answer on that?
I have to say, like, I look at all of the, I know this is going to sound like a cop-out, and maybe it is, but I have to look at all of these projections, like, you know, lineups, this lineup versus that lineup. And it all feels extremely hypothetical to me at this point, because it just feels like the baseball season is almost imaginary. And I just don't even see necessarily how they get on the field.
Wow. Well, I guess I'll just be playing baseball on my Nintendo Switch then, if that's the case.
So, you know what? As long as you're seated 6 feet away from the person that you're playing against,
right.
I think that's a better idea.
Very true. Jane McManus, director of the Marist Center for Sports Communication and sports columnist for the New York Daily News. Jane, thanks a lot for joining me.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.